I will call the meeting to order. If you are here, please check in on the computer. While people are doing that, I'm going to pass around a card. Bridget Flett is having surgery, so we would ask people to please sign this and return it up here when it gets all the way around. So if you are here, please check in on the computer. Mr. Sobranek.
Thank you, Chair. I have a problem with all these papers being dumped on our desk before every meeting. I get here 10 to 15 minutes early, and I still don't have time to read them, let alone make an informed, intelligent decision on this. Is there some reason why these are never in our packet or in our mail?
Which papers are you referring to?
The ones we get on our desk every meeting.
Well, the bond stuff, we don't get the same thing every meeting. The bond stuff that you got tonight had to come tonight because the bond just came in at noon today. And so we had executive committee a half hour ago to look at those. So we didn't know that information. That's why that came in at the last minute. Otherwise, certainly something as important as that we would get out ahead of time. Is that everybody? John, check in real quick and we'll close the roll. Okay, there are 27 board members present. That is a quorum. We'll go ahead with the agenda. The first, before the proclamation on Public Health Month, I have another proclamation, which is that Mr. Burns and his lovely wife are expecting their second child in early March. So, congratulations. And increase that population up there in the city of Onalaska. Good tax base. All right, Public Health Month, Mr. O.
Proclamation, February 2009, Public Health Month, whereas the La Crosse County Health Department improves the quality of life and health of all 110,000 people in La Crosse County, rich and poor, residents and tourists, young and old, and whereas the health department is made up of 80 full and part-time staff from a variety of professions, from health nurses, to clerks, to epidemiologists, to supervisors, et cetera, and all the lists that's there. Whereas the staff of the La Crosse County Health Department assist residents in realizing the opportunity to live a long and productive life free of preventable disease and the effects of preventable injury through the following services, everything from managing home health, elderly home visits, occupational health, school vision. And there's quite a list here. I'm not going to read through every one, but it illustrates the variety and number of lives that we touch every year. Now, therefore, be resolved, the La Crosse County Board does hereby proclaim the month of February as Public Health Month and urges all residents to join in recognizing the valuable contribution of health department staff dedicated to improving the quality of life and health of La Crosse County residents.
Moved by Margaret Woods, seconded by Sharon Hampson. Discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed no. Carried unanimously. All right, that gets us to the bonding resolution. Gary, are you taking the lead on that?
Yeah, again, we apologize that you didn't have all of the details before tonight, but again, Steve and I had talked about how we hadn't, that we had planned on doing a bond sale today at a previous county board meeting. In light of the interest rates dropping, we thought it would be advantageous for the county to go to the market. Again, we had included the first page of the resolution in your agenda. The reason we didn't include anything else is we did not have the specifics until we received the bids from the bank today at around 11:30 noon. We do have good news, though, and I'd like to introduce Joel Murray with Springstead, who is our financial advisor, and will give you the good news on the bids and talk a little bit about the market right now.
Thank you, Gary. Good evening. I am Joe Murray from Springstead. We are proud to be the county's financial advisor. You might have, Brenda Krieger has been working with the county, and you probably recognize her, but she was unable to be here this evening, and we worked very closely with the county on tonight's structuring. I do bring good news for you all this evening, so I do apologize for not having all the information ahead of time, but hopefully good news is easier to take on the fly. The first bit of good news I think I'd like to start off with is in regard to your bond rating. Prior to going out for this bond issue, we traditionally go out and get a bond rating from Moody's. Once again, the county's bond rating of AA2 was affirmed just this past week for this new issue. The rating agencies were very pleased by the county's strong fund balance position, as well as its better economy in relationship to the rest of the state of Wisconsin and the country as a whole. The La Crosse County economy is much more diverse and in a better position. And also your ability to be very flexible in understanding what it could be coming out of Madison. We're all waiting to see what the governor is going to propose, but we know that the county administrator, finance director, and the entire staff are working closely to keep tabs on what's coming out of Madison so that you'll be ready to react and keep moving forward as best as possible. So the good news is that your bond rating was affirmed again at AA2, which is very good. From that bond rating, we were able to receive four bids on the sale of $19.5 million of general obligation bonds. This will complete the financing needs anticipated for the law enforcement center to go along with the $10 million that was authorized through the state trust fund less last fall. The low bid came in from Hutchison, Shockley, and Early at a true interest cost of 3.36, which is a very good rate in today's market on money that's just over 10 years. It's on the yellow sheet that was handed out this evening. If you look on the front, you'll see all four of the bids. And what I'd like to highlight, too, is that the second bid from Robert W. Baird and the 10 other underwriters that joined in the syndicate came in at 3.67, so roughly half of a basis point spread the two bids, which is a very good indication that there was a lot of competition to buy the county's bonds today. And they both worked very hard to be that close. So that's almost a Michael Phelps finish in the Olympics, that they came in that close. So that's a positive sign. Pre-drugs. So we wanted to highlight that. The other item I'd like to highlight is that when we initially started working with the staff again to go back into the market for this second issue, when we initially sized this and projected the interest rates, we were expecting a true interest cost to be at roughly 3.63%, I believe was the number, roughly 30 basis points higher than the bids came in today. That's good news, and the benefit to that is that it does allow the county will be saving over $200,000 in interest costs by the bids that you received today from what we estimated that they would be. The other positive thing to highlight is that these bids were made at a premium, and that Hutchison Shockley is going to pay $19,975,730.60 to buy them from you. That extra roughly $476,000 is the premium. That is money that the county is able to deposit directly into your debt service fund to make debt payments on this issue for 2009 and in the future. Which is good news. It is more than the debt service for 2009, which will mean you'll have about $76,000 left over from that premium to roll into your 2010 budget process. And the staff and the executive committee, we talked about that upstairs. That's not good news to have when you're thinking about your 2010 budget scenarios. The blue item that you have also that was handed out this evening is the actual sale resolution. This has been prepared by your bond counsel based on the bids. The intricacy of the numbers on the yellow sheet have been put into the blue document. As I said, it's been prepared by bond counsel, and we would recommend that the county award its sale to Hutchison Shockley Early, and the resolution item 2-2 that's presented before you this evening. I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Let's get that on the floor first, and then we'll have questions for Joe. So, Tara Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have resolution 2-2 to the honorable members of the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors regarding a resolution determining to issue $19,500 in aggregate principal amount of general obligation law enforcement center bonds, series 2009A, whereas the County of La Crosse is authorized by the provisions of Chapter 67 Wisconsin statutes as supplemented and amended to issue bonds for any public purpose and to refund any municipal obligations, including interest on them, and whereas by initial resolution duly adopted on October 18, 2007, there have been authorized to be issued not to exceed $29,500,000 in general obligation bonds of the county for the public purpose of constructing a building addition and improvements to the law enforcement center, and whereas it is considered necessary and desirable by the County Board of Supervisors that the county borrow $19,500 for the purpose aforesaid, and whereas notice of the sale of such bonds was published on January 26, 2009 in the bond buyer, and whereas it is now necessary that said bonds be sold and issued for the public purposes aforesaid in the aggregate principal amount of $19,500,000, and whereas pursuant to the advertisement aforesaid, sealed bids were received for the purchase of said bonds in said amount until 9:30 a.m. Central Time on February 9, 2009, and whereas the bid of Hutchison, Shockley, Early and Company of Chicago, Illinois and Associates at a price of $19,975,730.60 plus accrued interest to the date of delivery was the best bid submitted, now therefore be it resolved by the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors to issue $19,500,000 in aggregate principal amount of bonds for the purpose of providing funds in the amount of $19,500,000 for public purpose projects of the county as set out in the preamble to this resolution. I move its approval.
Moved by Chair Johnson, second by Vicki Burke. Now time for questions. Mr. Bina.
I have a couple of them. We would get this money at the time we signed the contract, right? That check would come to us within the next week or two? Or
within the next 30 days, we'll 30 be settling days. With Hutchison Shockley, and they will be issuing a check of roughly at the $19,976,000.
Okay. Then, according to the information we got at the last meeting, which is a paper here, it says here the county would authorize $29.5 million, and maybe you changed your mind since that time, but this second bullet on there was planned to sell the remaining debt in the second quarter of 2009. Why did we move it ahead by couple of months or whatever, and what is our advantages of that? I might have another question to follow up.
As I explained at the last meeting, and the results are that based on advice from our financial consultants, we expected that the market had returned much faster than we had expected based on what was being sold in the market then. And you see that today. The 3.36 is better than Springsteen had predicted, and we were hoping to be at least what they predicted or better. And rather than waiting till later in the second quarter, which we didn't want to take a chance that the market went back up.
But would it have gone back up that much? Because we're putting another 3 months on the table here, or 3 months, basically.
Actually, there are a number of ways where we don't end up incurring a lot more interest. Remember, the state trust fund, you approved up to $10 million.
Right.
To this point, we've only drawn down $3.5 million. We don't have to pay with that. Unlike a bond issue, we don't have to pay interest until we draw that money down. We will save that entire interest on the $6.5 million until we draw it down later this year. So that amount of interest will be saved, far exceeding even the first year's payment on this bond issue. In addition to that, as Joe just explained, you're receiving a premium of $475,000, which will also match more than that amount of interest. So in every way you can look, this has meant interest savings and not going into debt any sooner than we have to for construction of the law enforcement center addition.
Yeah, but the point is that we are doing it 2 or 3 or 4 months earlier than we need the money, and
but not drawing down the state trust fund to the full amount that you've already authorized.
Okay.
So we're not doubling
all
up
right.
on interest. In fact, we're saving more than that $400,000 payment, which is in the first year, and also receiving a premium. So we're saving a lot of interest on this by not waiting till the end, and we're not going to draw down the state trust fund balance of $6.5 million until later on in the year, or as late as we can postpone with permission from the state trust fund.
I guess it isn't that big of a deal when you're talking about 2% interest versus 5 or 6% too.
Actually, it's saving close to $500,000 on the $6.5 million, and it's also, by receiving the premium, another $500,000. So it's quite a significant savings, in addition to the interest being at 3.36 instead of 4.5, which is a straight 20-year bond. So all of these machinations and all of these changes with advice of Springstead have saved us substantial amounts of interest. And I believe Joe quoted earlier that it's well over $1 million by structuring it with this 10-year balloon.
Excellent. Other questions?
Pardon? Oh, Joe?
There was another question. I was just nodding. There was.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I get ignored all the time.
Intentionally, usually, but not this time.
Just a quick question on the, why is there no principal payment, 2009, I understand, but for 2010?
That's more to myself, and what we're trying to do is deal with not having a large increase over time. If you remember from the projections that we've done from the two-year budget, we want to go in over a short period of time, because just adding $1.5 million in that first year, we're still struggling with making a payment on the old law enforcement center. So we wanted to ladder it in over time to minimize the impact on property taxpayers, because again, the building won't be done till the end of 2010.
Thank you, sir.
Leon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just wondering, seeing rates are where they're at right now, and they may never get better, why didn't we borrow more? Did you answer that question earlier this year, why we didn't borrow the other $12 million right away while we're at it?
Thank you.
That goes on to after 2018. Would there have been any savings in doing that, or is that just all speculation?
Two parts to that. The original plan was for the county to issue the $29.5 million back in the fall. And if you recall, that's when the markets kind of fell apart. And at that time, we could not recommend to the county to go out on a public sale and get rates lower than the 4.5% you were able to get through the state trust fund. So that was the recommendation, to get the $10 million, to get the money you needed to start with. And we had expected that the rates would improve after the first of the year, and they have. And so that is why we've improved on that. As far as the structuring, right now the markets are still leery. They're still a little tenuous on as to where they want to go. Right now they are liking shorter term money. The markets are wanting to, the investors don't want to have their money tied up for longer periods of time. When we ran and looked at doing a 20-year cycle, we projected the interest cost to come in closer to 4.5%. So we're saving about 100 basis points by doing the shorter term. To do that, we did put a large bullet or balloon payment, if you will, out in 2019. It's about $12 million. It's over $12 million. Think of it like your own mortgage, in that it is a balloon payment that you will need to come back and refinance to take out. And we will plan on coming back. The way we structure this is that the 2018 and 2019 year bonds can be called to have 2 years to see what the market is doing. As you'll see, the coupons for the 2018 and 2019, if you go on the back of the yellow sheet, you'll see that it's 3.25% and 4%. 1 year money typically is around 1.5 to 2%. So we will be in a position 2018, 2019 to refinance that, and again recognize the savings in there. When we structured it this way, we also anticipated the potential of rates changing in 10 years. Could they move away from us? We have projected that the rates would have to increase by about 200 basis points before the county would lose any money from the structuring the way it is done. The way we have it structured in our projections is that the county will save over $1 million with the shorter term financing and the shorter term rates, as opposed to doing the 20-year financing at this point. So this is we see this as a savings all the way around. It gives you the most flexibility, as was discussed, your flexibility with the state trust fund. It's actually cheaper to spend this money than it is the state trust fund and the 4.5%. So you have, I think, are well positioned for the financing on this, and we will be in a position in the next 8 or 9 years to come back and refinance that bullet. And we should be able, I hope to be able to stand up here and tell you the same sort of interest rates at that time.
Joe, in executive committee, we had a discussion about the city's recent bond issuance. Can you talk about that, their bond rating, and also their bond issuance compared to ours?
Yes, sir. We are also the financial advisor for the City of La Crosse, and back in early part of January, the city did a roughly a $7.5 million prom note, 10-year general obligation issue. The city has a bond rating of single A1, which is two ratings lower than the county. It has the same economy, but doesn't have the same strength as far as the fund balance and flexibility to move forward. And they also have a larger debt burden on their own budget as opposed to the county. That's why they have the lower rating. But we were able, we were one of the first sales for 2009, and we received very good rates. The city was received a true interest cost number of 2.99%. And that number sounds better than the 3.36 I'm presenting to you this evening, but the reason that it's really not comparing apples to apples is that the way the structuring on the city's bonds was much more of a regular structuring, and that it had regular defeasance of principal across the board. It had an average bond life of about 5 years. The average bond life on this, which instead of being 20, is structured at coming in just under 9 years. And as you go further out on the yield curve, longer out on how long the money is out there, the rates obviously go higher. When I looked at the reoffering yields from the bids that you received today and compared them to the yields that the city received, across the board, they are between 25, and I looked at it again just before the meeting, between 25 and almost 50 basis points spread on each of the reoffering yields. What that essentially means is if it was restructured and we were trying to compare apples to apples, the city's true interest cost wouldn't be at 2.99. It would actually be 25 to 40 points, someplace higher than your 3.36. I would say, I haven't done any real calculations, but the city's equivalent would have come in higher than 3.5 as far as a true interest cost. The city had very good rates. The market has improved since then. We were very pleased at that time. But it is, you did receive a better deal on the rates you have today than the city did in their offering we did earlier in January.
Brad Path.
Thank you. Just for clarity, because I don't know what to trust and not to trust in today's economy when it comes to companies purchasing debt. Who is Hutchinson, Shockley, Early and Company? Are they an equity fund? What are they? Where do they get their money?
Hutchinson, Shockley is an underwriter, an investment banking firm. They are the bid that we received came from their Chicago office. They have a Milwaukee office. They're actually in our building, or the same building that we're located in down in Milwaukee. They are very active in buying and doing underwriting in the state of Wisconsin. So they are a firm that's been around.
Do you know where they get their money? Who invests with them?
They're selling this to other. They're selling your bonds. They are an underwriter. That's all they do. They're going to make their money by buying your paper and turning around and selling it to somebody else. It is not an equities firm.
All right.
They're a true underwriter.
Ralph Geary.
Gary, when we get this money, what kind of interest rate do we get on the unused portions till we need it? We got all this in short-term stuff then?
Well, I mean, the lowest rate we're getting right now is probably about 1%. We will certainly try to get a little bit better than that. We can look at and speak with Wells Fargo. We can speak with M&I Bank. We'll speak with a couple other banks to try to maximize. But keep in mind that if we earn more on it, oftentimes we have to pay that back. So.
Other questions? Seeing none, let's. Do we need to do this on the computer or can we do voice?
Roll.
Okay, we'll try it without the computer. All in favor of the resolution as read, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously. Joe, thank you very much.
Thank you
very much to our staff for all your hard work on this matter. Before we get to process improvement team presentation, I want to mention. On your desk is an item with my letterhead that will be talked about, excuse me, under the chair's report at the last county board meeting. After the last county board meeting, a supervisor asked me what it is that I do to justify my salary. So on my way out to the inauguration, I took my calendar with me, and that's what I've done over the last 3 months leading up to that point. But I'll talk more about it when we get to the chair's report. But just in case you're wondering why that's on your desk. Process Improvement Team presentation,
who's leading that one?
Linda, if I get you to click that button.
No, this is the county, not me, right?
Yeah, there we go. In front of you on your desk, you'll see a PowerPoint that exactly mimics what we'll be sharing with us this evening. Two of us will be presenting, Dean Rupert, I'm the Operations Administrator for the Human Services Department, and Brian Joseph as the County Purchasing Manager. So we'll be talking through this process with you at this point in time. The first slide talks about why did we start this process. I'll say we had some encouragement from our auditors with a couple of audit findings back in 06 and 07 in terms of improving our timeliness of contracts, as well as making sure that the rates that we paid to our contracted vendors matched the contract rates that we had in the contract. As you can see, contracts on the furthest outside edge could take up to 200 days to complete just because of the processes and approvals that we needed to go through with our contracts. Again, many didn't take that, but they could take up that long. And again, auditors had major concerns with that as well as did our vendors. We had a meeting then after our team was formed and worked on this with many individuals, and one of them was to meet with our auditors on October 8th, as you can see. And again, getting more clarification on a couple of things. And one is that they, of course, would really like to see 100% of our contracts completed by January 1 of the year. They are amenable, obviously, to a 90% goal, knowing that that's even going to be difficult for us to achieve as we're still negotiating, for example, with the hospitals this particular year, again, about rates. But, again, 90% compliance, hopefully. They liked what we were doing, liked the process that we'll talk with you this evening about, as well as you hear about in the coming month. So we would not continue to be out of compliance for another year. There'll be a discussion about potential change or addition to the ordinances that allow us to move along more quickly. And that's, again, what I'll come to you a little bit this evening and again next time around. Just to give you some idea of the contract volume, just two quick slides here, one for our department, one for health, since we're both fostered by the Health and Human Services Board. You can see the type of contracts that we have and the number of contracts. Human Services has about a $30 million budget. About 60% of that is contracted out, and that's why it's a significant issue for us and for our vendors and obviously for our auditors that they've addressed. But you can see the type of contracts that we have there, of all sizes and shapes. Health being much smaller, they report to us that they have only about 9 contracts and only about 4% of their total budget. So the ramification of this will affect, of course, both health and human services. The biggest impact is in the human service department. So what we did was we identified a training, as you know and probably heard about, obviously, that Ken Miller came in, did a bunch of training with county folks in terms of how do we improve processes, how to be more efficient in what we do. And this is one of the areas that we identified during the meeting and discussions, and Steve then appointed a group that Brian was facilitating and I was a member on to look at this particular area, since we did have, as I said, the encouragement from auditors to go forward with that. We have talked through this quite a bit with people at the table up front here as well as others, so it's not new to them, but it's time that we start talking with you about it and move forward, hopefully, with implementation in the coming months.
Thanks, Dean. Bill Shepard formed a team here in June of 2008, last summer. We had people primarily from our human services department, and he set out some parameters and goals here for us, increase efficiency, reduce the processing time, goal for storage and retention, and to also maintain the checks and balances within the system. From this team, we met from basically June 1st all the way to Labor Day, every 2 weeks for a couple hours. We had 7 recommendations that came out of this. Electronic template, which I'll talk about later, that is locked. Means it cannot be manipulated. The electronic signatures, which are locked. We looked at performing functions concurrently instead of linear. A lot of the stuff we were doing was linear, it's a straight line, one person, then the next person, then the next person. Using SharePoint, we can set this up concurrently. We wanted to shorten the time frame for the vendors to return the contracts. It was 60 days, and you'll see later we're going to ask them to shorten that to 45. When we needed to notify the vendors, let's say after 30 days, that we had not received their contract back, we used to use the traditional postal mail. One of the things that come out of this is just to use electronic notification with email. And to look at going with multi-year contracts, we've got approval from the state to go with three-year contracts. And probably what we're going to talk about tonight is the alternate board approval process. The advantages of these recommendations: improved workflow, parallel processing, that's i.e. Things are done concurrently, the security of the documents, they're locked electronically, reduce the vendor return time, there will be more checks and balances, we've avoided or eliminated some bottlenecks, reduced our internal processing time, because we're using things more electronically, we're looking at savings on printing, postage, consistency of the language, ease of retrieval and electronic storage, accessibility for multiple users, and this will hold staff accountable via the electronic auditing process. The outcome of the recommendations, with all seven recommendations, including a proposed ordinance language change, we would, at the worst case scenario, look at reducing from up to 200 days the time to process a contract down to 70. And of those 70 days, a maximum of 45 would be for the vendor to return the contract. So if somebody's getting back to us within 10 or 20 days, this could be shortened to almost 45 days. I'll just give everybody a chance to read here. This is not the exact language change, but this gives the intent of what we're going to look at trying to do. This would be an addition to what's currently in the ordinance. For purchases over $20,000, I'll just read the language. The approval of the auditor / finance director, the purchasing manager, department head, human services operations administrator, and health or human services financial manager or their designees is required to award a bid or RFP by the human services department or the health department. The intent of this is just to affect those two departments. What we're looking at for a potential timeline here is to have this presentation tonight, answer any initial questions that you may have, look at giving a presentation at the Health and Human Services Board for the discussion, and then we would like to take this, bring this back to you for consideration in March for this ordinance edition.
Questions, Don Vina?
I thank you, Mr. Chair. I remember back a few years, I think I sat on Human Services for about 12 years or so. Contracts were not easy to get once in a while from some of the departments outside of the county, that is, the departments in wherever. A lot of times our contract was coming in a lot higher than we anticipated, and I think you can remember some of those that we had to negotiate pretty strongly in order to get the price down because we just didn't have enough money in our budget for the higher rates. And with gas going up and with salaries going up and wages and whatever, are you sure you're going to negotiate a contract in a short period of time on 45 days? Or are we going to look at new vendors then in place of the old ones that we can't get a contract?
Well, really what happens here is that the 45-day period is after we send the contract to them. What happens before we even develop the contract internally is we have what we call a source document. In order to get a source document, we have to have agreement with the vendors to what the rate is. So we already have an email from them, we already have a letter from them, whatever we've got, there's different sort of ways we can get source stock. We've already agreed to the contract. So the only thing they're seeing potentially for the first time, although the contracts don't change that much typically, is the contract language itself. They've already agreed to the rate before we issued a contract to them. So it's not the we don't use the contracts negotiating tool. We negotiate first. The contract's a legal document to hold them to the rate.
Okay, so you negotiate the rate
before.
Other
correct.
Than contract.
And we start negotiating with vendors in October, November, and December.
Okay. I'm going to ask Bill to comment on on one thing, so that people don't think that these are contracts that we haven't seen before. Human Services has literally hundreds of contracts. But they're many of them look alike. And Bill, can you kind of comment on that? Why the board shouldn't be real concerned that something's going to sneak through here?
Yeah. Most of these contracts are contracts with vendors that the Human Services Department has done business with for many, many years. And one of my suggestions to the department in using this process and getting the finance department involved is to determine early on which contracts need to actually be bid out, and you know that will be part of this process, so that where possible there will be competitive bids or RFPs requested, but the reality is many of these contracts are with sole source vendors. They provide a unique service. Could be client choice, where we're providing a service to a particular client that wants a particular vendor that's qualified. That has to be, you know, it has to be a qualified provider, of course. So there a lot of the contracts are going to be with sole source vendors. So there's really, you know, not much decision making that goes on, and really the people that know are Human Services. But we've built in to the system the checks and balances with the finance department, so that right now Gary and Brian will be involved in evaluating whether there is a good reason to do a sole source, or you know, is this an area that can be bid out and we can expect competitive bids, and they have been doing that, and that will be an ongoing process to make that evaluation.
And then when they come in, a lot of them are going to be on our form now.
Right. Yeah, just about all of the contracts that are on this slide that you see up there are all forms. I get banker boxes full of these things, and they're exactly the same contract. The only thing that varies are the name of the vendors and the rates that are included. So they have this very systematically done, and so we're taking the next step, you know, putting it in electronic mode rather than paper.
John Menninger.
Yeah, maybe this is a good idea, maybe it's not. I feel like I'm coming in the middle of a discussion here. I mean, I'm not sure what precipitated this whole thing. Maybe it's just to streamline the process, move it along, make it more efficient. But my first blush, just listening to this, is that the way they have process improvement is eliminate the elected officials. Even that $20,000 cap, is there going to be no cap on it? If it's $500,000, it's the same, you know, that it doesn't have to, somebody can sign off. And Mr. Chairman, speaking of efficiencies, under this thing, you don't even have to sign documents, and the Corporation Council is going to forge your signature on these things. It's like, I know this is efficiency, but at some point you become so efficient that elected officials aren't even aware of anything that's going on anymore.
Well, one thing I'd emphasize is these are routine contracts. When there's something out of the ordinary, it still comes in for at whatever level it needs to, whether it's the committee or the full board or whatever the case may be. But, Gary, why don't I get you to address this? You're our money guy for the county. So is this a concern that we should be worried about?
I hope not. Again, this is the existing ordinance is being enhanced. We are not taking the capability of the committee approving an RFP if they want to, if they decide to. We actually are adding more checks and balances, more scrutiny by having Jerry and I involved in the process. I can understand, you know, your question. But it is certainly not our intent to take any authority away from a committee, because again, the ordinance will still indicate that the committee does have authority when they want to exercise it. Whichever committee, well, in this case, yeah, in this case it's Health and Human Services, because we are just talking about Health and Human Services, yes.
The other thing I would note with regard to my signature is I sign literally hundreds of these a year, and the main thing I look for when they come to me is Bill's signature, because if they haven't gone through Corporation Counsel, I am not going to sign them. That's the procedure that we use. The same with Steve O'Malley. He doesn't sign them unless Bill signed them. We could look at them and not understand. I mean, they could be slipping one by, and we'd have no clue. That's why we have to rely on Bill and also the department. So I think the important thing is that the auditor said there's some checks and balances that they wanted to see in here, and that's what they put into this process. So it's actually a better process. The rubber stamp that I'm probably going to regret it, because Dick Meyer will probably write down that I said I rubber stamp all the contracts that come in, but the signature that I have on there really wasn't all that meaningful. The most important thing was that the department head and Corporation Counsel had looked at it, and they told me, yes, this looks okay. And then, you know, that was the elected official involvement.
And this is probably fine. Like I said, I feel like I'm coming in the middle of a conversation here tonight. I know there's lots of people here. Mr. Drews is here tonight, too. But I think the point is that we want government to be as efficient as possible, but government is not supposed to be super efficient. It's not supposed to be. Our founding fathers didn't want government to be so efficient. That's why we created 35-member county boards. If you want it real efficient, eliminate the 35 members and have a county board chair. I mean, that's the purpose of government.
Is there a second to that motion?
Slow down.
Okay, Dick, forget my rubber stamp comment and put government is not efficient, quoted by John. Sure, Mr. O'Malley.
One of the things to ask yourself, is there anything about the 200-day process that has any more involvement by the board? There's nothing of the 200-day process right now that has any more authority, that has any more involvement. It's basically a way of templating and streamlining the process. If the Health and Human Services Board, or frankly the whole county board, wants more involvement on any of these contracts, we can certainly institute that. But the current delay and lack of efficient process doesn't add any more oversight. All we're doing is talking about the standard day-in, day-out, basic templatable contracts that don't spend a lot of time by Health and Human Services now anyway to make sure that we have enforceable contracts. Because by going, one of the reasons auditors are concerned about this is, by going for 200 days without an enforceable contract, what are you paying under? Are you paying under the old contract? Nobody's agreed to the rate. You haven't been able to enforce what's going on. So right now there's less accountability because it takes that long, and there's no more oversight by elected officials. This process is quicker, faster, more efficient, and no less accountable than the current system.
Jeff Schrader.
I share the concerns of Representative Medegar. Not only are you taking the committee involved out of it, but you're taking the whole county board out of it the way I saw your last slide there, in a way.
It would be incorrect to say taking any of them
out of the process.
They're not in the process now. That's the point.
We're taking us out of the process.
The board is not involved in the process today.
Anything over $20,000, I thought we were.
We've got approximately...
Bill, explain the ordinance, how that works on that.
Well, we're just focus on Health and Human Health and Human Services, and basically Human Services. There will still be committee involvement in all other departments, because in other departments there isn't a standardized template. In just about, you know, if you look at the jail, or you know, the various vendors that the jail has, oftentimes those are contracts that we negotiate with the vendor. But these are our standardized contracts. Right now, there's a list of contracts, as I understand, in the Health and Human Services Board on the consent agenda, and the consent agenda is passed, and that's it. I guarantee you that you would get very tired of looking at four or five banker boxes of exactly the same contract. It's not very exciting reading. You know, I know which ones are standardized now. We will have the certainty in the future because the template will be locked, and there will only be certain people that can input information on them. Also, the other point I'd like to make is that these are budgeted purchases, and that's one of the reasons that finance will be involved. So if we get to a situation where the department exceeds its budget, then that'll have to come back to the committee and to the county board. So we're talking about budgeted purchases, traditionally the same kinds of purchases year in and year out.
And let me reemphasize that the committee or the board, whichever was appropriate depending upon the circumstances, has approved the expenditure. What they haven't seen is the 50-page contract, perhaps. But the underlying expense is part of a budget, part of something that the board or the committee has approved. All this is the final paperwork that you're being spared from being part of that process. Sharon Hampson.
Thank you. I just wanted to clarify from my position as chair of Health and Human Services. As Bill said, they are all contracts are listed in the consent agenda. We have the opportunity to ask questions about them. The point is, we set the priorities, and then we trust the employees to do the best they can with contracts. Now, when there's a new program that we're talking about, then we are involved in the building of that program, and there is oversight as to how money will be spent, and we often talk about vendors during the process. And we also discuss vendors when there's a change within a program or a problem within a program. So I would say that we still have oversight of contracts. We just don't do the day-to-day documentation of it. So I don't really see it as a loss of oversight.
Chair Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would add the perspective of a little more recent stint on Health and Human Services Board than Supervisor Bina, and that is that when contracts came to us through the consent agenda, what I recall as most typical in the conversation is, why are we getting this contract so late? So the board members were looking at it, they were reviewing it, they were approving those contracts, and they were concerned that a contract that was dated, you know, to begin January 1, 2009, as an example, was coming to Health and Human Services Board in June of 2009, 6 months into the contract, but because the process was 200 days in the making, the Health and Human Services Board wasn't seeing it until 6 months down the road. So I see this as a huge improvement in the process, and I would imagine that current members of Health and Human Services Board will be happy to see this when they review it in March. I want to move us to a different topic that I have a question about, if that's all right, which is, Dean, you referred to the source document and that process beginning in the fall of a year in preparation for contract signing before the first of a year. Have you done any process improvement work on the source document part of this process? I mean, it seems to me that ultimately can be the tougher part of this.
Yeah, that's part of the process. We didn't go into detail on that because really that's pre-contract.
Yeah.
We're really talking contract process here. But pre-contract, yeah, we do and will be getting letters out to our vendors with an acceptable budget package that goes out in June or July to them.
Right, but will you be doing a process improvement project on the source document portion of this work at some point, or is that continuing status quo?
We changed it last year
okay.
to source documents, so we're not anticipating any other changes okay. unless we find it's not as efficient as we thought.
Thank you.
Dambina.
Well, just one last point, I guess. Things changed considerably since I was on the committee, but we did get involved in discussions over contracts that weren't signed, and the prices came in too high, so we didn't do any negotiating as committee members, and I don't want to ever get into that. The staff did that, but now I can see where it's real easy to run the consent agenda through real fast without committee members even knowing that a point is there, unless it becomes an issue. But I guess I don't have a real big problem with this concept.
Ralph Geary.
Well, I had a question on how it got slowed up. If a contract ran out like January 1st and it never made it to committee till July, what did the committee do to slow it up for 6 months?
There are several pieces in a linear process who had to approve them. And so it would go from one body to the next. So it would go from the time that the manager, supervisor, negotiated the contract. It then go to a department head for signature, go to our board, go to corporation counsel. All those easily could have contained 30 days or 45 days that they sat somewhere in that approval process. And then the vendor took another 60 days. So you can see, you don't take long to get up to 200 days on the outside because you've got all these linear processes going on for approval.
Other questions or comments? Jim Burns.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One other quick question. How will the records be stored and kept electronically? I know there's a lot of electronic documents. I'm assuming there's like a backup system. And I guess how will we make sure that that's... We're not losing anything, I guess.
We've worked with our IT department pretty extensively with it. There's two different ways to incur. This particular product is called SharePoint, which is an IT product that was purchased and would be stored on there. All the data information is there. You can see, if you look on your packets on here, the process we go through, but it's all electronic. Even if the vendor were to send us back a hard copy after we send an electronic document to them, we scan that back into the system, and then it's electronic, and it's recorded. We've looked at Linda and her staff so that if they want to retrieve it, there's retrieval processes and so on in place. So it's all in the system. IT has a backup, as they do with other important documents, so they are backed up. We've been assured of that, so we're not concerned that's going to occur.
The electronic storage, to answer your question specifically, is in the databases for 10 years. Mm-hmm. And to talk about the security, once this gets locked, I can't change the contractual language. Dean can't change it. The only people that have ability to change this is the Corporation Council.
Other questions? Chuck Spiker.
I have a question on the vendors. Have you done a study or do you know why it takes so long to get back contract to vendors, or is it certain vendors?
It'll vary by the vendor and vary by the year. The larger the corporation, typically the longer it takes to get them back. Because again, they've got their attorneys looking at them, just like our attorneys have looked at them. They have to go to their board meetings for approval. And they may not like parts of the language or the rates that they again see now in written form.
Do you see any certain vendors doing this as a class, or is it just generally?
Just generally.
Because you want to cut it down from 200 days to 70 days, but you want to give them 45 days to send it back. There should be some other answer there.
Most vendors, we don't think with electronic means available now that we're sending this to them under, will take the 45 days. The reason for that, if we send it to them the day just before their board meeting, if they take it to their board typically meets 30 days later from that.
Okay.
So you got to allow at least 30 days and then a few days in between there. Again, we don't think that'll be the case, but depends how you hit that cycle.
Okay, thank you very much.
Anybody else? Dean, Brian, anything further?
Nope.
Okay, thank you very much. This will be coming through the March cycle then. Okay, Sustainability Strategic Plan. We've got the presentation on the Strategic Plan for Sustainability by the Joint Oversight Committee and Proposal for Sustainability Commission. And Jay Johnson, that would be you.
Did you need to run the PowerPoint here?
I've got a few PowerPoint slides, though. I'm no O'Malley, but I do have a few slides. Good evening. We'd like to talk to you this evening about the City and County of La Crosse Strategic Plan for Sustainability, on which you'll be asked to vote. Can't hear me? Okay. You'll be asked to vote on this on February 19th. And before I get into the details of the plan, I want to just take a moment to thank the people who served on the Joint Oversight Committee. That was the committee that you created to oversee the development of this plan, and that included former member Supervisor Tom Rauch, current Supervisors Marilyn Pedretti and Brad Paff, former committee member Nick Nichols and current member Rob Tischer, former staff member Jeff Blesky, and current staff member Brian Fukuda. So thank you for your service. I'm sure the slide will be up any moment now. I'll just continue without it, I think.
Yeah, probably.
Okay. Well, we can continue without that opening slide. One of the things I'd like to talk about tonight is a group that convened kind of parallel to that Joint Oversight Committee. Tim Cabot, some of you may not know Tim, where is he? Senior city planner with the planning department. He organized and facilitated a working group that was made up of city and county staff, because one of the things we didn't want to happen was that initiatives would be delayed, that staff would be waiting for a plan to be completed. There it is. That's it. Thank you. So these individuals identified several areas that they wanted to focus on, that the committee approved of, and so in addition to the work they've done on creating this plan, there's also been a lot more going on in conjunction with this, and I just want to share a few examples with that to give you some idea of what's been accomplished in the last 18 months or so. One of the projects they worked on was a sustainability website that should be coming up momentarily. Tim Cabot put together the materials for this, and then the county's IT department did the setup, so it was a good collaborative effort. It's certainly a work in progress. I know that Nick Nichols has made a commitment to continue to expand on this and enhance it, so it'll be interesting to see how this develops, but we think it's off to a good start, and I hope you'll visit that. Another area they worked in was on an environmentally preferred purchasing policy, and Brian Josted here in purchasing took the lead on that, and he not only organized a group of city and county people, but also collaborated with the technical college and the school district. And we appreciate your support of that legislation that group provided last summer, establishing the county's policy as environmentally preferred. But that group continues to work together. I think one of their goals is to achieve some cost savings through larger volume purchasing by working jointly. Another thing we worked on is community car. This too was initiated by Tim Cabot. He's been working with a group in Madison that started a community car program, and this is really, you can go ahead and bring up that full slide, Brian. This is really kind of a cooperative that enables people to share vehicles that's been very successful in Madison. Tim has held many meetings with that group and with interested sponsors, so we're hoping to see this program up and running successfully in the near future. Another thing these gentlemen have worked on a great deal is educational events, including the collaboration conference. They've also put together displays that we've had at fairs and other activities. One of the things we're doing is doing PowerPoint presentations to smaller groups. And Carl Green, who's here from the UW Extension Office, he and I put together some basic building blocks of a PowerPoint, and then he and Tim Cabot jazzed that up considerably with some graphics and some examples of things that have been happening at city and county. Tim and I have given a version of that to a couple of groups, but Carl has really taken the lead on this. He's given it to the JCs, the Towns Association, Train Leadership Council, a number of groups, and continues to do so. And part of what we want to accomplish with that, we want to raise awareness about sustainability in general, also about the natural step in particular, but we want to share many of the good things that have been accomplished at City and County in the past to give people something they can really be proud of and get excited about supporting. So Carl's really been a firebrand in leading that effort, in addition to educating people on rain barrels and rain gardens and how important that is in stormwater management. He also facilitated one of our first study circles in the community. And my final example is a brochure that I'm going to ask Brian Fukuda to hand around to you. Brian, in addition to doing a great deal to develop this plan and serving on the committee, developed a promotional brochure. It's called Sustainable Business Development Opportunities. This is very nicely done. Brian put this together and then working with a couple people from LADCO to lay it out and produce it. Just a really nice marketing tool. And if you don't plan on keeping these, we'd like you to hand them back in so we can recycle them, okay? But I thought you'd like to take a look at that. Okay, so hopefully that gives you a flavor for the work, the good work that's been accomplished in the last 18 months and the work that these individuals would like to continue with your support. Moving on to the plan. Now that you're reading the brochure, can you look at the plan? Okay. Does everybody have a copy of that with them? And if you don't, you can visit our website on your computer and look at it. Do you have any extra copies, you guys? Okay. Or share with your neighbor. If you're a student of all strategic planning, you'll pretty quickly realize that this doesn't follow the traditional format, but this ended up being a very staff-driven process, and I think this is a plan that staff are very comfortable with, that they can work with, that will be effective for them. They put a great deal of quality work into this, and there's been broad involvement with its crafting. So some of them are here tonight, not everyone, but some of the key people who've contributed are here and did a very commendable job. Now I'm going to read the plan word for word. No, see.
A motion to adjourn.
No, see. That. The good news is I'm not really going to read a word for word. I do want to point out just a few key features, though, that I think might make it a little more digestible, too. There's one more slide, Brian, you could go to. And again, just bring it all up at once. We don't need any of that fancy, you know, point-by-point stuff. There's quite a bit of introductory material in this plan, and one of the things I'll call your attention to is these four system conditions that are on page 6. These are somewhat familiar to all of you by now, and parts of the plan are organized around these principles, but I think it's important to emphasize that these conditions are intended to function as a framework. Even though each can stand on its own, they're not intended to be pursued in isolation. They're intended to be pursued in concert. So as you look at the actions in the plan, you'll see a lot of overlap between these four conditions, and that's a good thing. Some of the best things we can do will move us in the direction of all four. And in those cases where we can't quite do that, maybe we're moving in the direction of two of them, we're at least tasking ourselves with not violating the remaining principles. So as we pursue any of the actions outlined in this plan, these system conditions should function as our guiding principles. It's very central to what we're trying to do. You really could say that we're just trying to move in the direction of these four system conditions. Okay, on page 11, and this is another slide, Brian, you'll see our vision statement. And you'll see it on the screen, too, if our luck holds out. Well, if not, you do have, most of you do have it in front of you, I hope, or can look on with a neighbor. I'm very anxious to hear the board's feedback on this piece. You know, much of this plan will change over time. The actions and goals aren't going to remain static. They'll be different 10 years from now than they are today. But this vision statement is a piece of the plan that we do want to endure the test of time and stand. So we want it to, as accurately as possible, express the intent of the leadership. So hopefully we can have a very constructive conversation on that tonight and on the 19th and refine that statement. I don't think we have any more slides, unfortunately. Okay, I'm a little PowerPoint challenged. You don't? Okay, just a little. The natural step is designed to be a highly participatory model, and although we decided early on to primarily focus on city and county government, we were very mindful of the importance of community involvement and input. And we received input from the community through a variety of ways: their involvement with the meetings that the Joint Oversight Committee held, their participation in these educational events, but we wanted to do something a little more formal that would engage more people. So we conducted an online survey, and we have committee member Rob Tischer to thank for that, working through UWL. He conducted that survey for us, and the results of that are listed on pages 48 through 52, which of course you don't need to read now. You can read them at your leisure. But one thing that was interesting about this is the views expressed by members of the public were so similar to the discussions that we had in-house amongst employees and managers. People seem to be very much aligned in their thinking on what they want our priorities to be. The natural step is also a very action-oriented, results-oriented model. So I think it's fitting that a full 30 pages of this plan are devoted to actions and goals, and those are on page 13 through 43. Much of that material came from the workshops that we held a few months ago, and we had nearly 60 people from city and county participate in those workshops, so a lot of good material came out of those events. This is organized into three sections. The first is joint goals. Of course, the city and the county, though similar, are very different organizations as well, so many of the plans we're making are very specific to either county or city, but obviously where we can cooperate and work together, it's important that we do that. So staff identified the areas that they feel have the highest potential for collaboration, and those are listed on pages 13 to 14. Those are where you see the joint goals. The next section is city, so you can skip over that. And the third part is the county actions and goals, which are on page 31 through 43. Now, I think a little explanation is helpful on this section. That first part, 31 through 37, this is where actions are expressed in outline form, and it goes into a fair amount of detail on what those actions entail. The second portion, 38 through 43, you'll see appears in a grid format, and that actually is a reiteration of those same points in that outline. You're not imagining things. It's the same material reiterated. But the importance of that grid is that it sets some time parameters for those actions. It shows what we feel we can accomplish within the first year, what may take up to 3 years, and what will be longer-term goals. It also identifies specific departments to attach to those actions. And obviously, ideally, we want to see interdisciplinary teams that work with an integrated approach. But Mr. Malley in particular felt it was important to attach these to particular departments so there would be some level of responsibility in carrying these out. Okay, the next section is baseline data and sustainability indicators, which are on pages 53 to 64. There's a wealth of data that staff have pulled together in that section that can make for some very interesting reading, but if you don't want to get quite that immersed in the detail, I'd call your attention to a table that appears on page 12. That's more of a summary. And that table on page 12 really expresses the primary data sets that we want to track to measure our progress in moving toward those four system conditions. Staff selected most of these items. The committee did make some additions. And what we were looking at really to identify these indicators was, one, that they would be meaningful, that they would be things that people could readily understand. Two, that they would directly relate to the four system conditions. And three, that they would not be too cumbersome for the staff to track. That was very important. You'll note also that not only are there indicators for our organizations, for city and county, but there are also a few included that function for the community. We felt that was a way that we could support the efforts in the larger community by helping them measure things like how much energy is being used. And this was really one of the most challenging components of this plan. For one, there's hundreds of possibilities to choose from, so narrowing it down was challenging. And also, people with some of this information just aren't accustomed to tracking it. You'll notice that some items are flagged to be determined, because at the time we went to press, we either didn't have hard numbers or we weren't comfortable with the collection methods or the manner in which the data was expressed yet. So this is a piece that will evolve over time, that hopefully will improve. We felt it was important that it have a high degree of integrity, so we didn't want to include anything we didn't feel a certain sense of certainty about. And again, this may change. We may decide next year that some of these items are so time-consuming to track that we're just going to drop them off the table. But we look for that table to continue to be more accurate and meaningful. So, that's the plan in the highlights, anyway. And it is just that, a plan. It's a way of organizing and prioritizing our work in a transparent way that seeks your support. As you review the actions detailed in this plan, you'll see a lot of language like explore, promote, enhance, consider, support. What you won't see is language like mandate, regulate, require, fund. Any changes that significant need to come to you for separate approval and are not implied or assumed in the language of the plan. We've seen a lot of support throughout the community for this work, and internally in our organizations. We have been criticized, though. And the odd thing is, we've been criticized by some that it goes entirely too far, and others that it doesn't go nearly far enough. So hopefully what that means is that we landed somewhere in the middle. Because what we really tried to bring you is a plan that you can support. That's filled with possibilities, not impossibilities, but rather practical, common-sense measures that are good for our organizations, often low-cost or no-cost, that can oftentimes save resources in the long term. And more importantly, that demonstrates our commitment to responsible government and our commitment to the welfare of future generations. I'm sure staff would be happy to answer any questions you have, as would I.
If you have not had a chance to read this yet, then I would encourage you to spend some time on pages 31 through 37 or the chart that follows immediately after that. That is what directly affects the county. There's other parts that certainly are interesting, but in terms of what are we going to do, how are we going to do it, and so forth, 31 through 37 and the chart that follows would be where you should spend your time. And I know Steve O'Malley wanted to do some follow-up.
I just wanted to touch on, I know that we've all read with interest some of the criticism that's been reported, and I want to reemphasize what Jay just talked about, is that this plan, particularly with the work that the county staff has done, is not an attempt to coerce or affect anybody's freedom. What it's an attempt to do is to lead by example of a way of trying to identify specific steps that are achievable, that can accomplish things to save money, that can save resources, and follow the four basic system conditions. Pages 31 and on, which is developed by a day-and-a-half workshop by county staff, identified in seven different departments and areas specific things that will accomplish touching all county departments. Rather than pulling together 32 departments and developing an action plan,
I asked to tap the number of people within this organization that have the most passion and energy towards trying to move this organization ahead in facilities, purchasing, IT, solid waste, economic development, transportation, and education. That was very conscious on my part as the administrator, was to try to pull together the people that are most energized around this, most passionate about it, and identify things that touch across the entire organization. You've already heard Nick Nichols, our sustainability coordinator, which is a new position that you approved, paid for out of solid waste revenues. Nick has accomplished great things already just raising awareness, but for the first time ever, accomplishing office paper recycling throughout the organization. This isn't coercing or forcing anybody outside of La Crosse County's buildings to do this, but every single employee has been touched by this concept of trying to end up reducing the waste stream and end up understanding tangibly day in and day out what's happening on sustainability. That's just one small example. Now, we could always spend another year or two developing statistics on each and every one of these portions, but I would rather see us move ahead and demonstrate to the community, demonstrate to our own employees the kinds of steps that we can accomplish. And so that document that includes this was developed by staff with direction from the committee on the areas that we should be involved in, and led by Terry Gipps, who, those of you that attended the collaboration conference will remember him as a dynamic speaker talking about organizations both public and private that are making initiatives in this area. So I just want to reiterate that, number one, county staff, from everything from department heads to managers and the others that work in these departments have been involved in developing these goals and pursuing these, as well as the support of the administrator to try to put resources into this as much as we can, but to save money. That's one of the ultimate goals. The final thing that I just want to take just two additional seconds to recognize is that the collaboration of county staff and elected officials that served on this panel over 2 years, or close to 2 years, was really exemplary. And in particular, Tim Cabot from City Planning put just a wealth of energy and effort and time to really try to make this document more than just an action plan of suggested goals and objectives, but also an education document around what the natural step is. Far from being coercive, this is about trying to set a new leadership model and a new direction. I venture to say that there aren't too many cities and counties across the country that have done as much to try to work together. I know there are no two counties, city and a county alike, in the state of Wisconsin that have done this. But I think it's a very ambitious effort, and I think it identifies a number of areas that we're moving ahead on and that will allow you as elected officials to actually hold us accountable to what we're doing in each one of these areas on a short-term and long-term basis. And I really urge the county board to support this plan, to edit it, to modify it, to keep making us hold ourselves to a higher standard. But I want to make sure that you know that from administration, facilities, purchasing, IT, and the other departments that have been involved, we've put a lot of time and energy into this as well, and build a closer working relationship with the city staff than we've had historically on these same kinds of issues. So we're going to learn from each other as we try to set an example for the community. We're not trying to tell people what bulbs they should burn or not. We're trying to demonstrate that there are energy savings, that there are better sustainable practices that we can pursue, and not to dictate through legislation, but to lead by example. And I don't know that that's gotten across, or at least it certainly isn't what I've gotten from some of the debate that I've read in the newspaper, but I know their articles may not cover every single thing. So I just thought it was important that you hear that from the administrator. This, it really has the support of staff that have worked on it, and we'll continue to hold ourselves to this standard and to continue to move ahead.
Tara Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple pieces of feedback, a couple quick questions, and then a comment. Jay, you asked for feedback and drew our attention initially to the vision statement. Yes. As I read this plan, it seems to me that in the vision statement, it kind of lists, it goes 1, 2, 3, it's building a green economy, and then it's kind of reducing our footprint. Anyway, the sequence is first and foremost a green economy, and it feels to me like the action steps, I will say I read the counties a little more closely than the cities, but the county action steps seem more focused on 2 and 3 and then 1, if that makes sense. I kind of took those three components in the vision statement that you're looking confused right now.
No, I agree.
So anyway, I'm just giving that feedback. So if there's some way to, you know, I don't know if it's necessary, but to me it says building a green economy, then minimize the production of greenhouse gas emissions, and then achieving energy independence. And it feels like what you've outlined is kind of in 2-3-1 order. So
no, I think you made a good point.
I'm giving that feedback.
I don't believe it was our intent to express any priority, but it's natural to read it
that way.
So I think that's a good suggestion.
And then my first question is, I know we have a better bond rating than the city, but I think that in this document, the city's goals are measurable. And I was frustrated as a county supervisor that in the action items for the county, they're not measurable. There aren't targets, there aren't specifics. So I'm curious as to why there's such a difference. And now I'm getting a smile from you, so this will be interesting.
Well, it was suggested but not required. And I think part of the thinking on the county's part was that they could develop those goals over time and they would be more accurate. Brian might want to address this too, but don't take that to mean that the county won't measure their progress, because they will.
Okay, so then that leads to my second question, and if you want to chime in, Brian. If La Crosse County, or when we do all of the things that we say we're going to do in this plan, what difference will it make? How will we know? So to me, that measurability becomes really important in going back to what O'Malley said. This is good work, support it because it will make a difference. Well, how are we going to know that if the goals aren't measurable at this point in the plan?
Brian, you want to answer that?
Sure. I think some of the thinking on this was what we really strived to do was to get a plan adopted that sets a direction, that sets a course, and then give staff some time to, once you've approved of this course and this direction that we're headed, to actually work on establishing more of a strategic action plan. I mean, Jay made a reference that this isn't really a typical strategic plan as people that have studied strategic plans might define them as, but it sets a direction and it gives the county staff that have come up with some of these ideas your support in saying that yes, we think this is headed the right direction. So now, kind of, you know, we talked about taking each of these and actually setting out an action plan for how are we going to accomplish this, what's the timeline that we're going to accomplish this, what is the measurable goal that we'd like to achieve at the end of that. And we just didn't feel that was something that was committee time well spent. I mean, we struggled with trying to, do we take each of these specific action items and develop them further, or you know, can we leave staff to do some of that once we've given the staff a general direction? And then there is a reporting process in this. We'd like to continue to make reports on this, show you the changes that are being made, give you the recommendations for the measurable goals that we'd like to come out of these. But the idea was, let's get something adopted. Let's make sure that we're headed in the right direction,
so
before we go through a lot
of things.
In
what time frame would we expect to get some of those more measurable targets, either back from staff, or is the committee continuing and it'll be coming from the committee, or
Committee? There's a separate piece of legislation that you're going to be considering over the next month. I'm not sure exactly the track that's on, but it's to create that Sustainable La Crosse Commission that would kind of be overseeing a lot of these initiatives.
So they'll be the ones looking at specific
targets. So they would be the ones
targets,
that would
the more measurable
that the staff would actually report back to. And the timelines are in there. I mean, the some of the timelines in the chart are, you know, we'd like to establish these things. I mean, if you really, I mean, the idea behind getting this in front of you and hoping that you will adopt it and help us to move forward with this is that a lot of these things are already happening. I mean, we looked at these, and the comment was made at committee that Well, there seems to be a lot of check marks in the 1 year time frame. Is that realistic? Well, if you go down and we as county staff sat down and went through it, and we thought as we went down that list, well, you know what, we're already almost done with this. We're already almost done with this. We're done with this. We're already making significant progress on these things, and not. You know, not that we're trying to get out in front of you on this, but it was just the work needed to be done in the plan, but we didn't. You know, they were things that were saving money. I mean, as Nick's presentation last month showed you, we wanted to get going with these things because there is significant cost savings to be had by moving forward with these things. So the timing wasn't ideal, and it still isn't ideal. But we thought we'd at least, you know, get some document, the direction we're headed, and then continue to work on them. So over the next year, we you know, really like to take those check marks that are in the 1 year time frame, and get the staff and the department heads working on identifying those measurable objectives and things and quantifiable objectives that we can then track and see how we're doing.
Okay,
but the idea is that the Sustainable La Crosse Commission would be created for that purpose, to actually be that reporting agency that would keep track of these things and work with staff as they continue to develop that, and then ultimately bring that back to you.
Steve has something to add to that.
If I might interject, just use as an example, page 31, actions, conduct an energy audit and review all county buildings, then use the results to develop an action plan to increase efficiency and reduce energy costs. We felt it wasn't valuable time to figure out how much percentage we want to reduce, or that we want to reduce the carbon footprint of the administrative building or Lakeview or anything else. Do the audits, see what potential savings is, report that back to you, and then measure whether or not we're hitting those results based on a cost-effective analysis of what investment you have to put into it to actually pay back.
And that makes sense.
And we thought if we spent a lot of time on it, we wouldn't have had
right,
that.
As a reader of this document, novice reader, you look on page 16 and see a city goal that says by 2025 at least 25% of the city's energy needs. So there are measurable, mm-hmm. targeted, you know, very quantifiable goals, and there are none of those indicators mm-hmm. in the county one. So all I'm doing what I think Jay asked for, which mm-hmm. is to give feedback on this document, and that is one glaring difference.
Yeah, they took a much different approach than our group did.
Right, right. So that's what prompted the question. I get your answer. I appreciate the response. So I'm just giving feedback as a reader, much like I was trying to do on the vision statement. And then the last thing is to thank committee members, and especially community members who helped out with this project. I know it was long, and I can imagine some exciting meetings. But I appreciate the work that you've done and want to publicly thank you for it.
Margaret Wood.
Thank you. You know, Steve O'Malley said some wonderful things after Jay's comment, and just to follow up on Tara, you know, taking this wonderful idea and being able to personalize it and then creating the buzz in the community and seeing the newspaper report on different businesses or institutions that have already implemented green things, I just think that you've done an excellent job of getting something in print that is understandable and not in a foreign language of sustainability, but something you can really, you know, think about and see happening and actually doing. So, you know, kudos to everybody. This is a mammoth task that has been accomplished, and I think we can only move forward. And I don't know if this question fits in with this, but you know, as we see buildings getting the LEED certification in our area by other groups, has the expense of being certified come down? I mean, is the LEED certification process moving to being more common, and you know, just like, you know, TVs used to be thousands of dollars and now they're, you know, $70. Is that process happening in the certification realm? Do you know?
That's what I'd like to believe and anticipate, that the cost will come down. But I don't know, and perhaps someone on staff can answer that.
Is there any mechanism where people are reporting, or if you see a building being certified, are they reporting back to this sustainability group how much they're paying for that and who they're using? I mean, is that being accumulated?
No, we haven't started accumulating any kind of information on that. As we see the LEED standards become more standardized, you're going to see a lot more of the reduction in cost for LEED certification for buildings. We've seen some advances within our own area. Gunderson Lutheran has a standard now that all new buildings will be LEED certified. WTC is working on their building becoming LEED certified. And this is going to become the norm as we move ahead in time here. And the reason it's going to become the norm is because it's showing that it's reducing the amount of energy that we use over the lifetime of the building. And these are the things that we're looking at. And that's some of what's incorporated in here, is that we want to make sure that we're taking a look at the long term. And we're not just thinking that, well, it's cheaper to buy incandescent bulbs now. And it is. But over long term, if you invest in LED technology, you're going to save money, and a lot of money, over the course of time that the building is in production and it is in use. But we will be tracking a lot of that information, and we will see that cost reduction come in.
Okay. Thank you, and again, thank you to everybody who made this document possible.
Ray Ebert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I was reading this. I found about 80% to be wonderful, 10% to be so-so, and 10% pretty scary. And let's start with on page 3, the end of the top paragraph talks about, and for attaining social equity. And I wonder if you'd be so kind as to define that.
Where on page 3 is that?
The first paragraph, the very last line.
Okay.
I think that what that is referring back to is system condition number 4. And that's one of the things that really sets sustainability apart from just being green. Some people, I think, would consider that a moral imperative to meet human needs, but there's also a very pragmatic reason that it's included in this, because people are so hardwired to meet those basic needs, they really will cut down the last tree in the forest if it means staying warm. So it's just common sense that we need to do a better job of meeting people's basic needs if the environment is going to have much of a chance to compete. That's how I look at it. And obviously, we're not going to meet every single need of every single person in La Crosse County anytime soon. But hopefully, it's part of our philosophy to try to see that people's basic needs are met.
Yeah, but I guess
regardless of this.
Yeah, I guess social equity to me, and I stopped by and asked one of the judges, there's no legal definition, and almost stated that it almost becomes similar to the general welfare clause in the Constitution, and it might mean something to Chairman Doyle, it might mean something to Supervisor Brockmiller, and something completely different to me. For me, it might mean an equitable playing field. Some people might say an equitable outcome, and there's certainly such a large variety there. I think the first three things you've met well. The number 4 scares me in that, again, social equity, you talk about living wage, a lot of the green part I understand and makes sense. I get very concerned, and Sweden is a socialist country, and this comes from there, and I think that maybe a lot of folks could interpret this, and I certainly, it scares me enough, that this is going to be a social document much more so than a green document. And again, 80% I'm wonderful, 10% and 10% scares me. We have parts in the back, I think, that talk about page 35, number 2 on actions. Develop a plan that will assist county staff in the purchase of housing within a certain distance from the facility they work, using a one-time grant or low-interest loan program. That, for the taxpayers to pay for one of our staff members a housing allowance or something to move closer makes no sense. Number 9, develop program will assist county staff in the purchase of alternate vehicles using one-time grant or low-interest loan program. those are just so far beyond what I think our taxpayers should be paying that it's, again, we're getting into social engineering and subsidies that for county workers that aren't available to everyone. And it just seems, I have a problem with the social part of your program.
Sure, sure. And I think the short answer is that equity means different things to different people. But I'd ask you to remember that no program like that is going to be approved by endorsing this plan. Anything that ambitious, shall I say, would have to come back to the county board and get the funding, get the approval. You know, some of these are ideas that the staff would like to explore, but you're not giving them your stamp of approval by endorsing the plan.
But when you put the word social equity in the plan, it is in there, and someone could use it in writing a letter and say the board has endorsed this. And I just think it's a bad phrase, and I'm very afraid of it. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
Marilyn Pedretti.
A lot of what I was going to say has already been said. I just want to thank the staff as well. Terrific job on the plan. Obviously, sustainability is kind of near and dear to me. As most of you know, I've built a house that's somewhat sustainable, but not perfectly sustainable. I had listened to a lot of people because some people would say, why'd you use this or why'd you do that? I'd probably be living in a cave if I wanted to really be sustainable. I think this plan is a good plan. It's not perfect. It's certainly not the social change that some countries have done, but I think it's a nice start. It's an operations plan. It's kind of just what the county government can do in our operations that can change how we think about what we do. And that's why I think this plan is a good start. There's definitely going to be some readjusting. It says it in the plan. We'll revisit this yearly, 5 years. You know, there's nothing in here that says this is going to change everything overnight, but I think we're on the right step. We're heading in the right direction.
Red Path.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I didn't think that we would talk about socialism when we talked about this plan, but I guess we are. I was happy to serve on the committee. In fact, it was a pleasure to serve on the committee. I've had the opportunity in my job, my day job, with Congressman Kine to travel around the congressional district and meet and visit with many municipalities and counties officials. And they keep talking about what's going on in La Crosse, County of La Crosse and City of La Crosse. I hear it in Dunn County. I hear it in St. Croix County. I hear it in the city of Eau Claire. I hear it in the city of River Falls. What are you guys doing down there? We'd like to learn a little bit more about that. It's very interesting how you're able to bring together the city and the county and actually talk about sustainability. And for that, I give a lot of credit, obviously, to Jay, but I also give a lot of credit to Steve O'Malley, the full board, for allowing us to move forward on that. Regardless if you approve of all the words that are in this document, one thing that you can agree upon is that the many of us in the nation, you know, want to see our energy policy changed. We want to see our environmental policy changed as well. But it's always discussed at the macro level. You know, we got to do more. We got to drill more. We got to, source our energy in a different place. And there's not an awful lot that we can do about that at the micro level. Well, this is something we can do at the micro. This is something that we in the county, you know, regardless of what words are here, and we can have a discussion about what social equity means for some versus others. But what I believe it means is the following. I believe what this document means, and that is that, you know, we as society, we always talk about how we got to change things globally. But the old bumper sticker was we got to act locally. And quite frankly, that's what this document does. It allows us as a county to think about what practices that we currently participate in and what we can do to change those practices. And, I think that's something that's good. It's refreshing. It allows us to think organically. It allows us to think freely. It allows us to say, okay, this is the business model we're doing now. What can we do differently in order to save time, energy, become more efficient? I think that's all very good. I support this document the way it is. I'd be willing to make changes if the majority of the board wants to make changes, but I think that we should move forward on this plan because I think the people in the county want this. They want to see at least the county board coming forward and recognizing that we need to do something in order to make an impact on this this big, larger discussion that we in the nation are having. Thank you.
Leon Paff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree with that, too, but the question I had was, this is a collaboration between the city and the county, right? If the city or the county, either one, would not vote in favor of this, would this derail the program, or how would you continue at this point? Say, for instance, the city head or the county head election, which how would you deal with it after that point, or is it dead or gone? Or
I think it could certainly be approved separately, that the city may endorse it, the county may not, or vice versa.
Where does it stand right now? The understanding I had was the city was going to vote on it.
The city council will vote on it, the final vote Thursday this week.
Thursday this week.
Right. And the county board will vote on it the following Thursday. So.
But if one or the other rejects it, that's what I'm wondering.
Maybe that's more of a question for Bill, but I don't think that would have any impact.
Well, I think what you see in the plan is an action plan for the city and an action plan for the county. Now, obviously, the county board cannot, I think right. has been well stated, we can't force them or mandate to the city. We like the word mandate from the state. So the county cannot mandate that the city pass this or do the things that are set out in the plan. So it would seem to me that the county board could proceed with its part of the plan irrespective of what the city does.
So what you're saying is we don't need approval from any of the other villages or cities, such as Onalaska, West Salem?
No, we're doing the, I think Steve said it very well, this is a model that shows the county's leadership. We're not mandating that anybody else do anything.
Bev Mack.
I was going to comment on Tara's question. I read the county plan first and the whole thing. Then I got to the city's plan and I thought, wow, they are more specific, you know, a little bit more specific and maybe a micromanaging a little bit more. I don't know. But I think the grid that we both city and county have behind their word, their plan in words, does have a timeline, and we have the county has a timeline here, the grid that starts on page 37, you know, and we in 6 months to a year we hope to do thus and such. And I was impressed how many X's were in the ongoing column, and I'm also impressed with the fact that you said some of these 6 months to 1 year you're already in the middle of doing. So I think I like the way we wrote. Or that you wrote the county plan. I think it's going to get done. I can just see the passion that the staff has for this, and the passion that the city staff have. I applaud everyone involved with this project, and it's contagious. I think, you know, you just see how people are getting excited about this and trying to make some effort to live our lives a little more environmentally friendly and not maybe be so toxic with the way we live. So I really enjoyed reading this, and I underlined like crazy. So I was impressed with it.
John Menninger.
Well, first a point of information and then maybe a short statement. Where is this document physically at? Is it? It's here tonight. And then is it still in committee someplace where it could be amended? Because I'm thinking, you know, if people have amendments, the best place to do that is in a committee someplace. But if it's going to come to the full county board next Thursday and just we've got a free-for-all here with everybody offering amendments, where is it?
Executive on Thursday.
My suggestion is if people have amendments, take them to the committee and try to work them out there, because that's really where amendments are most proper and it's easier to deal with in a smaller number. But you know, if we're going to start amending mission statements and visions, you know, amendments are really supposed to be more specific on action items rather than the broader philosophy. But I didn't know where it was.
If you're not on executive committee or aren't going to be able to be there on Thursday, get those amendments to Steve and he can bring them.
Yeah, you can always amend it on the floor. I understand that. But sure. It just seems better to try to do it in committee.
Actually, any amendments or suggestions to myself or Brian, I'm at WCA the next 2 days, but Brian's here, so we can help you reword it, or if you just want to delete something, feel free. We will compile those and take them through.
And then my comment, you know, it seems like the rhetoric in this country, particularly since the last presidential election, when we really started throwing around the word socialism a lot, I hadn't heard those types of relatively inflammatory rhetoric until it seemed like this last fall, and now you seem like it's an everyday kind of thing. And I know that some people are concerned about this, and even my good friend Mr. Ebert on this idea of social equity. And I started thinking, our founding fathers were revolutionaries. Revolution overthrew a government because they were oppressed and didn't like the way it was, and they used language in their documents like all men are created equal. Of course, that didn't include African Americans, women's, or Indians, but it was a good goal. It was a goal. It was a good goal, and it set this country on the right course, that all men are created equal. Well, that sounds awful socialistic to me. And I don't know if we call our founding fathers socialistic. It says in our Pledge of Allegiance, and liberty and justice for all, not for some. Not for the favored few, not for people with money in their pocket, for all, liberty and justice. Somehow that comes kind of back to me, to social equity. So I just don't know why some people are getting a little bent out of shape about rhetoric that came from our revolutionary founding fathers 230 years ago. Good Americans, I think.
Can you answer all Ray's questions after this? Do you mind?
Rain Friedland, let's see you top that one.
Oh, man. Well, I wasn't going to raise the lead issue myself because, and to me, that's a little bit of a sore point, and I think that we made a mistake, and we lost an opportunity to do something very concrete and that could be done now with a lot of long-term benefits. However, that decision was made, and experience is a great teacher. And I am pleased, since LEAD is mentioned in here, that it is something that we will be considering at the outset, because I believe that the big mistake that we made with the jail edition is that we didn't consider it at the outset. Frankly, we didn't know enough about LEAD to consider it at the outset, so it kind of got tacked on at the end, and then it became something that we had to add on in cost, and it was more difficult. I believe if we consider LEAD at the beginning, that we will bring the price down, we'll have better leverage, and we can make LEAD more common. So there are really nice things. Well, as far as the LEAD, I'm satisfied with the way that it is. Also, regarding this, the county plan, words that I highlighted as I read, and some of these have already been said, the words that dominate in this plan to me, I'll do this quickly, focus on, invite, develop, host, enhance and expand, utilize, learn more, investigate, research, study, promote, minimize, improve, explore, analyze, study, offer, evaluate, work with, create, contribute, educate, build on. These are all words that the departments will be operating under with this plan, and I believe I did find the word require, although that might have been in the city portion of it. But words like require or adopt really aren't prevalent here, and taken in their context correctly, they're subject to budgetary restraints, basic reasonableness, and practicality. So I think that this goes in the right direction. As a member of the Solid Waste Policy Board, and familiar with what the landfill does and how we dispose of solid waste, there's nothing new particularly new here. There's nothing strange here. There's nothing foreign here. This is stuff that we are doing already. So I think that this moves us in the right direction. It could be a little bit more ambitious. I think that the goal should be reviewed more often than once every 5 years, or the plan should be reviewed more often than every 5 years, updated and reviewed more often than every 5 years, and that's something that I would ask you all to consider. But I think it's a good start for us, and I hope that we adopt it.
Ralph Geary.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just had some clarification on a few things. I've seen in the RFPs they're going to put green vendor standards. What does that mean? Are they bid as alternates then? So we know what the difference in the cost is when that comes in? Or
I'm going to ask Brian to respond to that.
Maybe to answer your question, Ralph, is if I could expound upon what's been said here. If I could take in the broader context of purchasing, we've really started with, like, if you go into the bathroom, some of the hand soap, some of the chemicals. To answer your question about the RFPs, we have not come up with any language, or that's, we have not decided exactly how we would do that, as kind of Maureen and some other people have said here, is that we're using this as a guidepost. So at this point, we don't have any specific language. We've started out with some more concrete things like the chemicals. We have not moved on to the RFP.
But I mean, if we do it, are we going to bid as an alternate, or that'll just be bid as a requirement?
Well, what we'll do is, as the sustainability resolution concerning purchasing that was passed in August of 2008, when we're looking at products that I prefer to use the word sustainability instead of green, is that the policy states that we're going to look at buying stuff to the extent practical based on price, the performance of the product. So there's many things that we're going to take into consideration, but I think the key point is to the extent practical.
Okay, I don't want to belabor that. I see they want to increase the life cycle of computers from 7 to 8 years. What was the rationale on that? You know, IT tells us we get rid of them every 3 and 5 because of changing technologies
The way John explains it to me is that we're able to, with keeping up to date on software and those types of things, to not have to trash out computers as frequently as we have.
Oh, these are dumb terminals, basically.
It will save money. It will end up also saving resources by not having us turn over as often. So it's just part of IT's reanalysis of how often we have to turn over computers. So it saves cash. It also saves resource by us not having to dispose of them as often.
Okay, he's just talking about upgrading the server to the computers. All the software's there. They're like dumb terminals, basically, or something.
Right, and keep upgrading what's necessary so okay. We keep up to date with software.
And then I see they said something about they want to sponsor Bluffland Preservation in La Crosse. What does that mean? Do we give them money every year, or do we have to do any kind of work? That's a good idea, but do we take it over, or... On sponsoring Bluffland Preservation in the city of La Crosse, I didn't know what our involvement is when we use the word sponsor. What is that?
Jenny, do you know the answer to that?
You know, the city does sponsor the Bluffland Preservation Program.
Are we going to be involved in that at all?
Well, again, the board would have to approve that in order to fund that program. If you want more detailed answer, I'd refer you to the staff.
I thought that was in our county thing there between pages 31 and 37. Maybe I had the wrong page, so... Not a big item. I can get the answer to that later. They had something about a regional transportation system in there. The only thing you omitted was John's name, and I think that should be included in that that thing, because that thing didn't look like it took off real good. So, but
we continue to work on that, and there are elements of a regional transportation system, not as extensive as we might like, but we keep working on that. And we keep bringing you, and we'll bring you policy decisions related to that.
Okay, and the other one, I've seen this, and it said work to attract more living wage jobs in La Crosse County, and I think we've passed that in numerous resolutions and declarations or whatever. What are we going to do differently now than we're currently doing?
Well, some of it is the example that Brian handed out in the information with the brochure. It's a way of trying to encourage that
jobs that are long-term sustainable, that protect the environment, it's more likely to end up surviving long-term, and that it's the new growth industry in the world and in the country. And if we can, as an economic development entity, both city and county, promote those types of things, hopefully they'll be higher paid and longer lasting for folks in this community than, say, a job that's producing something that's no longer in demand or will end up polluting and not being sustainable. It's not that firmly defined, but it is trying to look in that direction. And that brochure, by the way, has had input from the entire economic development professional work group, from LADCO to City of Onalaska, City of La Crosse. We continue to try to find ways to carve out a niche for those kinds of jobs in our community.
Very right. My point is, so is everybody else. I mean, basically around the country. So we have to do something differently to try to get them to La Crosse.
There aren't too many that have brochures like that. Collaboration, trying to identify clusters, specific things that tie into you. I don't know if you follow, but Western Technical College has just gotten a recent grant to work in this area. I mean, there's a whole lot of things happening in our community that we could talk about more, that really is carving out a different niche for La Crosse than other places.
Well, I think that's... that's great, but what is Wisconsin nationwide? Are we about the middle of the income levels? Are we about maybe 25th out of 50 states on Mr. Brockman, my point is, isn't La Crosse at about 87% of Wisconsin? I mean, even up to this point, we don't seem to be doing well in that area. I'm not talking about the future ones. Maybe Mr. Brockmiller can give us a report on that at some point.
Bill, where do we rank?
Well, La Crosse County, in terms of state average wages overall, are about 90% of the state average somewhere. It vasts, depending on the year, we float somewhere between 87 and 90% of the statewide average. Now, that's a overall average. There's two things that are in, I mean, that affect that average. One is obviously how much any occupation a welder gets paid in La Crosse compared to how much a welder gets paid in Milwaukee. There's some difference there, but also inherent into that computation is the makeup or the distribution of jobs in the two areas. For instance, if La Crosse as a percentage has more retail clerks than Milwaukee County does, then that overall wage comparison is going to be lower in La Crosse simply because they have a higher mix of lower-paying jobs. I would see this as working on improving. I mean, La Crosse has some good things, and I wasn't really prepared to go into the whole thing tonight, but something like this, to me, seems to work on the mix of jobs. In other words, trying to attract jobs that pay better, like the example of, not that we want to lose retail clerks, but trying to attract jobs that are more skilled and therefore pay usually comes with them.
Jim Burns.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is more procedural regarding the adoption of the plan. I guess I see the plan as three basic parts. There's the commonality parts that include the executive summary, introduction, brief overview, natural step, vision statement. And then there's the State of La Crosse Action Plan, and then there's the County of La Crosse County Action Plan. And so I guess my question is, Supervisor Johnson, you mentioned that the city would look at the plan this week and move to adopt the plan.
We would hope.
Right? Yeah. Okay. So assuming, let's just say that there's some discussion, and I don't know, maybe there's some amendments, wordsmithing, whatever. There's some changes with the city. The city brings out changes. They approve. They adopt the plan with changes. So if there's changes in the common areas of the plan, then we would see those changes, and then we would vote whether to accept those specific changes, or would we operate as it's written and make our amendments, and then we have two different documents that are amended two different ways, and then we have to bring it back together again and hash out the differences. I guess I'm not to make this more complicated, but the city is going to look at the plan. We're going to approve the plan in some way, shape, or form. We're going to look at the plan, approve the plan in some way, shape, or form, and then what?
Let me answer the procedural part. If the city makes changes to the plan as it relates to, as you referred to, the commonality portion of it, I would ask the city council people who are on the county board to let us know that. that would then be presented to the county board, and we could either approve them or not approve them. If there are portions of that commonality that aren't common, that doesn't throw out the rest of the document. I would look at that as what you might call severable. If this paragraph for them is different than this paragraph for us, I don't think that that causes a problem, and I would encourage this board not to get bogged down in wordsmithing and that type of thing. I would rather look for areas where we agree than areas that we disagree. So that's how I will handle it when it comes over here.
So basically we could have two slightly different plans, which
exactly.
Is... Okay.
Exactly.
Thank you.
Don Vina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll keep this pretty short. I have one concern right at the beginning, number one up there. I have a concern. Reduce the dependence on, and that includes minerals at the end, which means stone quarries in my estimation. If we reduce stone quarries in La Crosse County, we're going to have to import our rock if we don't continue with the quarries like they are. And I'm not on highway anymore either. But we had some horrific discussions with some people in the county trying to open up a new quarry, and it didn't happen. We need a certain amount of rock for our roads and our system, and unless we do have, we're going to have a lot bigger cost by importing that rock from Vernon or Monroe or Minnesota or someplace. And I didn't know what you meant in this statement by that, and that was my one big concern with this. Otherwise, I think I was pretty agreeable to a lot of it.
Okay. Can I respond to that?
You can if you want to. Otherwise, you can save it for some other time.
Okay.
Go ahead and answer.
I'll respond briefly. We're very precise with the language reduce rather than eliminate, for one thing, in both the municipality resolutions and in the plan itself. That's the American Planning Association's language. Actually, in Sweden, they do use the word eliminate, but we've adopted the more Americanized version of reduce. So, one, we're not planning on eliminating the use of underground minerals, but I think really the spirit of this is that we'll do more recycling and reuse so that we don't have to quarry as much stone.
And we have other products we're starting to use on highways. The other point I wanted to make is that Friday I was at a meeting of the Ag Committee, and the Environmental Committee met jointly. There is a resolution from the Environmental Committee going to the state WCA convention this year which asked for the elimination of potash in lawn fertilizers, and that is going to be at WCA convention this year, so I thought you might want to know that.
Andrea Richmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A few questions. Page 28, it says that the city and the county will host an open house to present the sustainable plan. Is there a plan now that we're going to have something presented to the public, and if and when is there a public hearing on this? So that I did have some calls today on that, people wanting to know when they could come here and speak before the county. Or have you scheduled an open house, Jay? Maybe you can answer that.
We have tried to get the word out as much as possible where the public has opportunities to speak when the plan is being presented, such as at J&A or Committee of the Whole, at Executive Committee this week at on the county side. No plans have been set to do an open house. I guess we'll have to see how this fares through the legislative process, but that's a goal that we have is to...
Would it be best to have the open house scheduled before we adopt both the city and the county in case there are other viewpoints out there?
Perhaps.
You know, I'm just tossing that out because, you know, once we go public on this, it's pretty hard to make a change. And I guess I would prefer to have an open house with the public first before we adopt the city and the county plan. I think I had, being that, you know, we're going to suggest to recycle plastics, and I remember a few years back being on the county board, the Wisconsin Grocers Association was very adamant about recycling of plastic, creating a lot of difficult situations with their businesses, and recycling of plastic and how that's going to be done with throwaways and so on. So I'm hoping that there would be an open house before we would have implement this plan for recycling. Thank you.
And Jay and staff, maybe if you'd talk about that. And
And I would just add again, plastics is a good example. If we decide we're going to recycle plastics, I think there'll be a lot of public debate, a lot of public hearings where people can discuss those kinds of particulars before we make a decision.
And just to elaborate on that example, people that are opposed to recycling plastics may have a particular means of doing it that impacts them negatively. If there's a way that the retailers aren't impacted and there's another way to separate it from the waste stream that doesn't impact somebody negatively, that's a separate decision. The concept is to try to reduce, recycle, and reuse as much as possible. That's the theory. So if we can develop systems that do that without negatively impacting a business or that they can be a part of that, that doesn't have to be a major subject of the open house. It's a goal. And then we have to come back to policymakers with decisions that end up involving people. It's just like the old bottle bill discussions. You can end up eliminating bottles from a stream without charging a deposit. So there are just different ways of trying to reduce that and follow the four system conditions. Again, this isn't trying to impose anything on anybody. It's saying that's a good goal, let's work towards it, and if we can do it that doesn't impact people negatively but saves from the waste stream and reuses, then it's a great goal. Let's see if we can develop a plan that everybody can buy into instead of presuming that one method of doing that is going to negatively impact the retail community.
Is there anyone who has not spoken for the first time yet that has a comment or a question? Because I want to get first timers, if anybody has any. Okay. The only one for the second round is the guy who's kind of been beat up half the night. So, Mr. Ebert, you're up.
That means I'm having a good night. It's only half that I've been beat up.
There you go.
I thought Supervisor Richmond's idea of a public open house or public hearing, I think this is a fairly substantial policy thing for the county. But my other question is, the city's looking at hiring a coordinator or something. I wonder if there's a way that we can share ours and contract with them. If we're working truly collaboratively, it saves them money, it'll offset some of our expense, and I just think that that's something that might be looked into as a cost savings. And again, talk about collaboration. If both folks are, if one guy's serving two masters, and I think in this case that probably could happen. Sometimes that's not effective, but I think that might be something we want to look at too. Thank you.
Any other comments on this or questions? Okay, that's it. Thank you, Jay. Next item, presumably it'll be short. Questions on the Mississippi Valley Health Services Intergovernmental Agreement. You received that since the last meeting, and this is more for questions that arose as a result of having seen that. Are there any? I know Jill Billings was the one who had some concern on that. She's not here tonight, but is there anybody that had any questions on that? The Mississippi Valley Health Services Intergovernmental Agreement, it was actually up last time. We approved it, but we made that kind of subject to if there was any concerns tonight that we could make any changes. So. Bad luck.
Page 4, this loaded voting or weighted voting.
Loaded voting is a little different.
Well, it sounded as though every meeting, if somebody asked for a weighted vote, there would have to be a count of how many people in that particular county are there for each of those county supervisors who are on the board. And how do you manage that bookkeeping?
Bill will answer that.
Well, for each, basically where this would come up would be at the annual meeting. So once
you'd
a year.
You'd have it ready then.
Right.
Yeah.
Sure. And basically, it's a protection for La Crosse County so that if we have approximately 60% of the residents in there, if there gets to be a real controversial issue, and I think you've been to a number of the meetings and there haven't been any real controversial issues, they've been basically by consensus.
Yeah.
But if it does occur, a weighted vote could be called for, and then it would be based on the number of residents that you have in the facility. So it's a way to protect against a county that has one person in the
a nursing home from doing something that would be adverse to another county that has the majority.
Okay.
But we hope that it doesn't occur, and basically this is an agreement where anybody that, and Steve has emphasized it at every meeting, if you don't like it, you have an option to leave. And so we have to build consensus in this whole model.
Any other questions or comments on that intergovernmental agreement? Okay, next item is the chair's report. This will be brief. As I said, on your desk was the summary of my calendar, and what I did was I just pulled out my calendar, took it with me, wrote down the various appointments. As I said, this started by the issue coming up in terms of what is it that that I do to earn my salary. But then I started thinking about it, especially new county board members may not actually be clear on what exactly is the role of the chair. Every once in a while I read that I get paid for wielding a gavel once a month. Well, actually, that's twice a month, not once a month, but also that's actually a very small fraction of what it is that I do. If I were to describe from my perspective the role of the chair, what I think I have turned into is kind of what you might call a troubleshooter. When an issue comes up, the ambulance, the jail death, whatever particular issue comes up that needs some attention, I try to jump in and see if I can resolve it. A lot of times that involves meeting with other communities or private sector and so forth. So when you look at my schedule for the last few months, if you looked at it 3 months, 6 months from now, it may look very different other than some of these ongoing meetings. I deal with whatever comes up, and it seems like whenever one problem is resolved, another one happily jumps in to take its place. But I think that's a good use of my time. I don't try to do Steve's job, Bill's job, Gary's job, or committee's job. You don't see me at all of your committee meetings because I do have a bit of a concern that when I show up, everybody has an equal vote, but quite honestly, I think that when the chair talks, people tend to, whether they admit it or not, tend to listen a little bit more sometimes, and perhaps that's not appropriate to have too much influence on the day-to-day operations. And so I really have tried not to micromanage. So I wanted you to get a flavor of what it is that I do. This is the only way that I can quantify it, is to look at my calendar. What's not on here is how many hours I spend at these things. Also, what's not on here is the things that aren't calendared. Today I had half a dozen phone calls from board members, staff, members of the public. How do I write that stuff down? I stopped by the chair's office today, signed a bunch of contracts. I never write those things down. But I wanted you to get a flavor of what it is that I do. And let me mention one last thing, and that is, if you do have a question about, what have I been working on or where am I going to be this week, whatever, the chair's calendar is a public document. If you call Margaret or you call Terry upstairs and say, I want to know what Steve's calendar is for every day this week, they'll read it to you. I mean, when I have a client at my law office, it simply says client appointment. When I have a meeting, it may say judiciary and law, that kind of thing. So that it's clear what is a public thing that I'm at and what is a law thing. But I told Margaret when we hired her, I have no secrets. If somebody wants to know what I'm up to, they have a right to, and you don't ask them why, you just give them the answer. So wanted to give you a little bit of flavor. Anybody have any questions on this or concerns or anything? Wanted to. Mr. Ebert.
Yeah, it was my request, and I thank the chair for doing it. I think it gives some open and accountability, and I appreciate you doing it, sir.
Sure, no problem. Jay. Turn that microphone on if you're going to say that.
I said, I don't think you're paying you enough.
Actually, I did do a calculation. County board members get $4,600 a year, $4,616 specifically, plus you get mileage. I get the county board salary and then a chair salary, which is three times that, so I get about four times. Although if you add on your mileage, it's less than four times that. And so if you want a rule of thumb, I should be as busy four times what you are. So if you're going to 3 meetings a month, I should be going to a dozen or more. And you know, I've never sat down to try to figure out how many hours I put in. When you're on salary, you do the job that needs to be done. And as any of these people up here would tell you, sometimes it's great, you get to go home a little bit early. Other times you're here till 8:15 at night. It just goes with the territory. So, other questions or comments? Andrea.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for Mr. O'Malley. Do you have a date set yet for April for the retreat? Usually in April? No. Okay. I was wondering if at that time we could invite a special speaker, Mr. Monk, who's Robert's Rules of Order expert, parliamentarian. I think it would be good for all board members and possibly even the city council members to come to that as well, being I think everybody needs a little bit more information on how meetings are run and appropriately.
Well, please, if you have a contact, get that to me and Mr. Doyle, and we'll take a look
okay.
at it. One of the things we want to talk about is the whole guidance around administration and policy, and that's one of the work issues that we've got this year. So I was actually hoping to have that be a major topic with the retreat, but Mr. Doyle and I haven't talked more on that, but to try to help define things better and give better direction. So.
Two things. Steve, let's, by next Thursday's county board meeting, have some proposed dates for that April so people can get it on their calendar. And secondly, later this week we are talking the initial discussion in terms of policy versus administration so that we can kind of work some things up to bring to the board. Margaret.
Thank you. I noticed up in third floor today there are recycled paper bins. Do we have any of them down here for county board papers?
Yeah, there's one up here.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Those of you who are on the executive committee should have a packet of materials for the interviews for the 5th District County Board seat. I'm asking the Executive Committee to assist me in the interviews and to make a recommendation for that appointment. But I want to extend that invitation to all board members. If you are interested, we'll be doing that this Thursday at the end of the County Board meeting. We figure starting about 4:30, and we have 9 people who have applied. If you come to that meeting, prepare to be impressed. I've looked through these applications. There are some very impressive people who have applied. And I would also say there are no duds who have applied. I think we're going to have really good representation coming out of the 5th District. And that's why I'm glad to kind of dump it in the lap of the executive committee so that I don't have to make that decision alone, because there's really some quality people who have applied. So if anybody who is interested, please feel very welcome to come on Thursday. And it's not Wednesday this month. Executive Committee meets Thursday starting at 3:30, so you are all invited. That's the end of the Chair's report. Does anybody have anything else we need to cover tonight? Mr. Geary?
Not tonight, but next Thursday, are we getting an update from Bill on these litigation things I asked for? Do we need a closed session on some suits we have pending or something, or what our status is, or update on it? Or
can you do that, Bill? Okay. Linda, if you make note, closed session for Corp Counsel report, we'll call it. Okay. Thank you, Ralph. Anybody else? Jerry Sobranek. Seconded by Bill Brockmiller. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed no. Carried unanimously. Good night.